comes from Paul's letter to the church at Rome, chapter 15, beginning with verse 23. Those wishing to follow in the pew Bibles can please turn to page 199 in the New Testament. The reading begins at the very bottom of the page. In this passage, Paul speaks of his travel plans, which involve a follow-up on a collection taken in several congregations. Let us listen for what the Spirit is saying to us today. But now, with no further place for me in these regions, I desire, as I have for many years, to come to you when I go to Spain. For I do hope to see you on my journey and to be sent on by you once I have enjoyed your company for a little while. At present, however, I am going to Jerusalem in a ministry to the saints. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to share their resources with the poor among the saints at Jerusalem. They were pleased to do this, and indeed they owe it to them. For if the Gentiles have come to share in their spiritual blessings, they ought also to be of service to them in material things. So when I have completed this and have delivered to them what has been collected, I will set out by way of you to Spain. And I know that when I come to you, I will come in the fullness of the blessing of Christ. May God add understanding to the reading of his word.
So, obrigado is the Portuguese word for thank you, and it is the title of the sermon that I sketched out before I left. And that sketch kind of lasted until about 11 o'clock yesterday morning, so I just thought, for those of you who follow this kind of thing, most of you it probably doesn't matter much, but for those of you who follow this kind of thing, maybe this is a better title for today. To the end of the earth. The end of the earth. Is that okay? Can I shift that? Can I do that? I hope so. It took the Romans almost exactly 200 years to subdue the Iberian Peninsula. And they called all of it then Hispania. It took them from a little over 200 years before Christ to about 1920 years before Christ. To do that, and one of the last people that they managed to subdue were the Celts of Galicia, or as they say in Castilian, Galicia. And that Gal in there is the Gal that you hear in the Gaelic language, or in the Gauls of French speak, or even the biblical Galatia. It is the Celtic background of a whole lot of people who were in areas before the Romans came along, and in some ways still persist. You walk around Galicia and you see bagpipers doing their thing. And if you like bagpipers, you're a very happy person about that. I like bagpipers, so a good piper is a good thing. Well, once the Romans were there, once they managed to subdue Galicia, they discerned this little bit of land, this little tiny peninsula up there, and called it Finisterre, the end of the earth. Now, whether they understood that to mean that it was the last little bit of land before you went out into that vast region and fell off the flat earth, or whether they just understood it to be the westernmost portion of their empire of Europe, they called it Land's End, the end of the earth, Finisterre. It is neither, by the way, the edge of the world before you fall off, nor the westernmost point. The world is not flat. I know there's some controversy about that on the interweb thing. Finisterre, as it happens, is not the westernmost point of Europe. The Portuguese are perfectly happy to point out that the westernmost point in Europe is in Portugal. Nonetheless, the end of the earth, the end of the land, the end of the earth. My vacation involved, included 4 days of walking from a little town called Camarinas down to the end of the earth. 4 days walking to the end of the earth, although there was some severe rain one day, so really I walked 3 1/3 days, but nonetheless, walking to the end of the earth. Sound like an interesting thing to do. Part of that was some inland paths through forests, some of them overgrown a little bit more than this. Some of it was some inland waterways that were truly enjoyable. It also involved going through a number of very old villages where there were all these old stone houses that were hundreds of years old. Some of them occupied, some of them abandoned. One of the things that doesn't get talked about, there's all this stuff about the European Union and Brexit. I'm not going to take sides on that, but one of the things that's happening in the EU is that because of all the connection between all these different countries, when young people get bored with their little teeny tiny town, they don't just move to Madrid, they can move to London, they can move to Frankfurt, they can move to all kinds of cities and rural areas all over Europe, but in particular in Portugal and Spain and other countries that have struggled a little bit economically are being depopulated. Fewer and fewer people, more and more abandoned houses, especially fewer and fewer young people. And so you see a lot of this, an ancient house in which nobody has lived for a generation or two. This is the church, the Iglesia de Santiago in a little town called Serratio. The foundation and the western wall are over 800 years old, as is a little bit of artwork that we'll talk about in a little bit. You find these kinds of old church buildings, Romanesque architecture in the middle of so many of these little villages. But a lot of what I did in my walk was right along, hugging the edge of the Atlantic, which I found to be just very powerful, very beautiful, these long, long, unoccupied for the most part, beaches and some cliffs and so on. Almost as beautiful as Oregon. Very, very nice, very nice. High praise for me. I remember this feeling of coming along and for the first time seeing that peninsula that is Finisterre, the end of the earth, and saying, that is where I am going. That is where I am walking. And so I did. Got out there. There's a lighthouse out there now. Because we want the end of the earth to be safe. And I remembered this sense of accomplishment, of having walked to the end of the earth. It's figurative, but it still is such an interesting journey to go, in my mind, in my body, by foot from one place to another, even when a taxi helps you jump that rained out portion. There is that sense of accomplishment in doing that. I like to think a little bit that that might have been what Paul had in mind when he wrote to Rome. He takes this section that Shirley read and talks just about his travel plans. Says, right now I'm planning on going to Jerusalem because there was this ministry for the saints. He is tying up some loose ends about that. He notes that the Greek churches of Macedonia and Achaia were generous and shared all kinds of resources, so he's going to take those resources to Jerusalem. Now, some of you may have remembered a few weeks ago, we read from 2 Corinthians, and we had that one section where Paul just really nagged the Corinthians, like, you said you were going to do this gift for the Jerusalem church, you haven't done it yet. Some of you may remember that. Here's a little clue about what happened. Achaia is the province for Corinth. So for Paul to say this means that the Corinthians got their act together and fulfilled their pledge, fulfilled their gift to the Jerusalem church. It's just one of those little hints that you can get in the midst of Paul's letters. So kind of a happy ending to that particular little bit of tension. So Paul says, I've got this collection that I want to get together and get where it's going, take it to Jerusalem, and then once I have done that, then I will come to you on my way to Hispania, on my way to Spain so that you can support me with your prayers and probably, he means, your funds to get me out to Spain, to get me out to Hispania. It was his desire to do that. There are scholars who say that Paul was racing with his sense of history, that he felt an impulse, a need, a command to preach the good news in what he would understood to have been every nation before Christ came again, and that he was striving to do that, that he'd already basically seen the word spread throughout the Eastern Mediterranean, and now he felt that he wanted to go west. He may have intended literally to go to Hispania, to go to what we nowadays call Spain, Portugal, that area. Or it may have been just a figurative thing, the way we use Timbuktu. You know, just I'm going to go way out there. I'm going to go to the end of the earth. Acts uses that phrase to talk about the mission of the church, that we will be Christ's witnesses, starting in Jerusalem, to Samaria and Judea, and then to the ends of the earth. That may have been Paul's vision, figuratively or literally. But either way, he wanted to take the gospel west. He wanted to go to the end of the earth. I have just an inkling of what that might have felt like, having gone to the end of the earth myself. Paul probably didn't get there. He probably didn't even get a chance to go west at all. We think that once he got to Rome, he was placed under house arrest for a while, and then eventually there were some problems, and Nero decided to scapegoat the Christians for the burning of Rome. You remember Nero was supposed to have fiddled while that was going on. I think it was a saxophone. But he chose to blame the Christians for that, and Paul, we think, was beheaded in the persecution that Nero used as an excuse to scapegoat the Christians. We think Paul didn't get there. But someone got there. And someone got there early. The tradition is that James, the son of Zebedee, John's brother, James and John, this fishing duo, the tradition is that James got there early. That he went sometime in what we would call the 30s, as we say, and that he made connections in Hispania all over, even the extreme, even out to the ends of the earth, and that he then came back to Jerusalem, was killed in what we would call about the year 44. Acts talks about him being the first of the apostles to be martyred. Now, the English name James, pardon me for doing this, but I hope it's not too confusing. The English name James is really meant to stand in for the Hebrew name Jacob. And in Spanish, one way to say Jacob is Iago. And so when you have Saint Iago, you end up with, maybe you've heard of it, Santiago. It can be a little confusing sometimes because you'll say, well, it's Jacob and it's James and it's Santiago. What? Santiago has been a focus then of Galician Christians for a very long time, and he is portrayed as a pilgrim. He's portrayed with this staff, indicating that he has walked along a journey and had that staff to kind of help him make his way, to lean on as he does so. So that if you look at our window to James, you will see a pilgrim's staff and a pilgrim's purse right over there, right? That's what James is about. The tradition is once he is killed in Jerusalem, his friends, his companions, take his body back to Spain. And so that 800-some-year-old church in Serratio has, can you kind of make it out? The shadows are a little strange, but it is the friends along the top there, and a boat along the bottom, more in the light, and then James's body kind of in the middle. They're on a boat taking his body back to Spain. This is represented all over in Galicia, way up there at the end of the earth. The idea that Santiago, the pilgrim, brought them the good news and himself was returned after his death to where they live as well. In the 9th century, in the 800s, the tradition says, a Roman-era tomb was discovered in Galicia and believed to be the tomb of Santiago. So a small church was built over that site, and it eventually became a place of pilgrimage as well. People from all over Europe in what we would call the medieval years would journey, would walk hundreds of miles, hundreds of kilometers to go to the tomb of Santiago. And the city of Santiago de Compostela grew up around that. And so nowadays there is a very famous pilgrimage route called, oddly enough, the Camino, the way, the route. And people from all over Europe continue to walk following these little signs to Santiago. There's no longer a simple little Roman-era church built over his site. There is a rather elaborate Baroque cathedral there that is quite an impressive thing. Though I'm not a huge fan of Baroque architecture, it's a little bit overwhelming. But it states the importance of what has gone on there. And it represents the thing that is important in what so many people do. I think maybe in some level what I was striving to do, this idea that a journey can be a physical experience where one takes one's body and goes from here to there, but also a spiritual experience whereby one makes an inner journey and experience a kind of spiritual movement. There is a spiritual sense of discipline and power in going from one place to another place. That is a goal, but also it's not just the destination, right? It's the journey. We understand that. We understand that kind of language. The interesting thing for me, I think, is that I think all of this, all these various things, Paul and his effort at collection, Paul and his journeys, and then the whole idea of James, of Santiago, going out to the end of the earth and then being transported back there even after his death, and then the tradition of pilgrimage to the place where he's understood to be buried. All these things point to a profound and I think very biblical concept, and simply that God is always calling us beyond. God is always calling us beyond ourselves, beyond our sense, beyond our place. And that call comes from the very beginning. It is part of our DNA. From the very beginning, the church was a transformational, transnational, barrier-breaking community. I realize that when I talk to people who are curious about or who are new to our tradition, to the disciples of Christ, one of the things I tend to emphasize is, well, you know, we're local. We make all our decisions locally. There's no bishop. There's no pope. There's nobody telling us what to do with our money or who we can call or how we do what we do here. It's all local. And I realize that's a temptation that I give into because I know it has an appeal. There's a lot of us who say, yeah, local. I want to control my stuff. I want it to be about my community. I want it to be about local. All of that's important. But it's not the whole story. From the New Testament, from the very beginning of the gospel, we are called as church, as community, to be more than local. From the very essence of the New Testament, there was a connection from Jerusalem to Greece, even out to the end of the earth. Those people who might have been tempted to think only in local terms were invited by the good news and by the people who purveyed the good news to see the connections that they had in Christ beyond the local to those people who were different than them and yet who claimed Christ, to people who were far from them and yet claimed Christ. We are invited even to this day beyond our local parochial temptations to a global perspective that exceeds tribe, that exceeds locale and identity. We are invited to see that even those who are at the ends of the earth are our sisters and brothers, our family. It is just that simple, and it is just that complicated. The invitation is to let the journey continue.